the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, if you thought about retirement, most people think about moving to maybe a sunnier part of the United States, whether it's California or Florida. But what about thinking about retiring overseas? With the dollar rallying against major currencies over the last couple of years, it could make living overseas more exciting. Joining us from International Living is Jennifer Stevens. She's executive editor. And Jennifer, you follow not only some of the best places to retire around the globe, but also some of the best countries. And I wonder if we might start with, you have like a top 10 list of some of the best countries to live in for retirement, because I think as we go through those and get down to number one, one country has been there consistently, and I think it's going to surprise a lot of our listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. You know, I should maybe start by just saying that there has never been an easier time to retire overseas, to go abroad. You have so many options today for moving full-time, but also moving part-time, for having investments overseas in countries where the values are good. And it's never been easier. It's never been easier to find information. It's never been easier to stay connected when you go overseas. You know, 27 some years ago when we started writing about this idea, it was kind of nutty. You know, if you went overseas, you kind of went, and maybe you wrote letters back home. But today, you can sit on a beach in a place like Belize, put your toes in the sand, and Skype your grandkids back home in Oklahoma. You know, and so a world is full of opportunities today that just didn't exist even 10 years ago, but certainly not 20 and 30 years ago. And so what we've done is kind of surveyed the world. We have folks who write for us, who are expats, who live all around the world, and we have gotten together with all of them and asked them questions so that we could come together and figure out the best places. And so our list includes places all around the world. And as you said, our number one pick for 2017 might surprise people. It is Mexico. I think there are some misperceptions about Mexico out there, but we hope to allay them with our coverage.
Let's talk about that. I mean, you do list 10 countries, but you list Mexico is number one, and it's been on the list for a long period of time. We think of some of the issues that have come up as a result of the political campaign about illegal drugs, about the drug cartels, kidnapping, all these things that you hear about as Americans when you're living here. But tell us why, from your ranking, why Mexico has ranked as number one for several years in a row on your best 10 list.
Mexico wins for various reasons, to include the proximity to home. It's easy to get in. It's easy to get out. The places in Mexico that we're recommending are safe. In fact, I should make that point that all of the places that we talk about, places that I always tell our editors, if you wouldn't send my parents there, we're not going to write about it. So these are places that we feel expats are living very safely. Can you guard against every eventuality? Of course not. But we're not sending people, our readers, to places we don't believe that they can live safely and comfortably. But Mexico is not only then, the places we're recommending are both safe. They're relatively close to the U.S. The values are really extraordinary in Mexico. I mean, you can live an extremely comfortable, even sort of high-end kind of life, eating out often, enjoying a beautiful home, having money left over to travel around on about $2,500 a month or even less. In large part, the places we're recommending are very walkable communities, and so you don't necessarily have to have a car. They're places where you are meeting the very warm-hearted Mexican people who live all over that country, and so you're making friends with your neighbors. People say all the time that living here reminds me of what the U.S. was like in the 50s, you know, that people know their neighbors, people take time to chat, people have long, leisurely dinners. The medical care in Mexico and the communities we recommend is really top-notch and can be accessed for a small fraction of what comparable care costs in the United States. And, of course, in Mexico, in the places we're recommending, the weather is great. It's beautiful. It's sunny. And so in a lot of ways, you know, what's not to like? You know,
You raise a couple of questions because medical care is always a concern, especially if somebody's in retirement where, you know, you may have heart issues and things like that. You talk about you can live rather well for $2,500. I mean, almost live like a king overseas in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Are there certain areas, like when you recommend, I imagine there's certain cities, because I have a friend who travels down there and he tells me what you can get for your money. And I'm talking about high quality restaurants, places that you go, pristine beaches. You know, you think of Florida or California, you know, Mexico has some very pristine areas. But when you add it all up, and you give it a score of close to 91. For buying and renting, it's a 94. For visas and residence, I mean, how easy as an American is it to get in and out of Mexico? Because some countries, it's very difficult.
That's one of the best things about Mexico, particularly for part-time living. Most places, if you're traveling on a U.S. passport, we have privileges of about 3 months in most places. You can come in on a tourist visa. But Mexico offers 6 months. So it's really easy to be a snowbird, essentially, in Mexico, because you can come down. You don't have to jump through lots of visa hoops or anything like that. You don't have to get permanent residence. You can simply come in, and they'll allow you to stay without incident for 6 months at a time. And if you do want to stay full-time and extend your stay and extend it for many years, they make that process very easy to do. Essentially, the government wants to make sure you won't be a burden on the Mexican government. So you do have to show a certain amount of income, but it's a very modest amount. You know, your Social Security check would probably cover it, or you can show a certain amount of assets in an account. And so they make it easy in that regard. And you mentioned healthcare as well. Healthcare is both easy and affordable in Mexico, too. I'm not recommending every single place in Mexico, but certainly communities where there are large expat populations, accessing really good first-rate medical care is easy to do. So in a place like, for one, an easy one is Cancun, but also a place like Merida or Guanajuato or San Miguel de Allende, these are communities where large expat populations exist. And there are lots of doctors who speak English, many of whom trained in the United States. But you can go in and you can might get a checkup for $35 as opposed to, you know, several hundred that you might pay in the United States. Medical care is both less expensive than it is at home, but so are your prescription drugs. And so while that isn't necessarily the reason people would go to Mexico, it might not be their number one reason to go to Mexico, I think people can be comfortable in the knowledge that the care that they will receive, particularly in those larger communities, will be really first rate.
Jennifer, two questions before we move on from Mexico. Number one, it's my understanding, at least from clients I talk to and friends that go down there often, there are large American communities that are living in almost like retirement communities in Mexico of Americans that are there for the very reasons you've been talking about. Is that true?
Yeah, that definitely is true. And you'll find them in a couple of places pop to mind. One is the Lake Chapala region, which has really one of the best things about that area is not just that it's very pretty, it's on a huge lake, but the weather is spectacular. It's kind of spring-like all year round. It will be in the sort of 80s all year. It's not very humid. So it's a very nice, comfortable climate. You might need a sweater in the evening. And it's like that all year round. So that's a very nice community. And there are hundreds, probably thousands of Americans who are going down, and Canadians as well, who are going down to the Lake Chapala region. Many of them are snowbirds that are going part of the year. San Miguel de Allende, which has gotten a lot of coverage in the travel media recently, is a beautiful colonial city in the central highlands of Mexico. And that is just gorgeous, beautiful, well-kept, renovated buildings. But you could get an apartment there. You could rent an apartment if you were going to rent for a few months at a time for maybe $600 a month. And I know I went on a short-term basis. I went with my family a few years back to take them. I had been many times, but my family hadn't. And we rented, just to give you a sense for the good value, just for a short term. We were there for just a couple weeks in San Miguel. And I think the place we rented was less than $1,000 each week. It was a huge house with a swimming pool. It had a slide from the second floor balcony that slid into the pool. It was, I mean, genuinely lavishly furnished with beautiful artwork, just gorgeous. There was a housekeeper who would cook for us. I could pay her extra to cook. It cost $17 a day for her to do all of the cooking. She did all of the laundry. I mean, it was crazy. I recently have looked at sort of Airbnbs in Denver And, you know, you'll spend more than that for a little studio. And so the kind of value that you see on that short-term level as a traveler is multiplied really when you're looking at the longer-term stays.
The other issue is how easy when you go down or want to live in these communities, let's say you're newly retired, you're thinking of going down there because your money buys so much more, as you've explained. What about the language? Do you find a lot of the facilities, the restaurants, the medical facilities that the people speak English? So if you're not fluent in Spanish, for example, do you have a lot of people speaking English as you find so often in Europe?
Certainly in places where there are large expat populations, you'll definitely find people speaking English. But to be fair, we really recommend to our readers that you attempt to learn Spanish. But one thing we like to say, and I think this is very much true, is you do not need to be fluent. The most important thing is to be sort of polite, to understand the local mores, you know, so you can get what you want and what you need. But that's about as much Spanish as you need. You do not by any stretch of the imagination need to be fluent. And in communities like Merida or like Lake Chapala or like San Miguel de Allende, you're going to find a lot of people who speak English. And so you really can get by with very little to no Spanish.
The other thing that struck me about your top 10 places to live, a good majority of them are in South America. For example, you list Panama, Ecuador, Costa Rica. You talk about Colombia and Nicaragua. So a good many of the places you talk in your top 10 are South America.
Yeah, they are. In part, that's because they're just close by. You know, our readers are residing in the United States and they're looking for places they can maximize their retirement and enjoy a better quality of life for less money. And you can do that all over Latin America. Central America, as you pointed out, in Panama and in Nicaragua, the values are really extraordinary. Panama City is a huge, big cosmopolitan city, not unlike Miami. But you can live there for probably at least half, if not a third, what it would cost you to live in Miami and really enjoy sort of a high-end lifestyle. Nicaragua is a place that is kind of like, I would say, maybe Costa Rica 10 years ago. The values are really extraordinary, but the infrastructure for tourism and for expats living essentially is just kind of just coming on board now. In some ways, that makes the values really extraordinary. So the kind of sort of beach house you might find in California for $1 million or more might cost you $200,000 in Nicaragua. And it will look just like that beautiful house that you would like in California. So the Pacific coast in Nicaragua is really extraordinary in terms of the value that it offers.
Looking at some of the other areas, they're mainly in Europe. I think you have one in Asia. Let's talk about European places. For example, you talk about Malta, Portugal, and Spain. Let's talk about those. I know the dollar has done well against the euro the last couple of years, but when you think of Europe, you think of something very expensive.
I think that's a misperception that people have. And for sure, you can go to places in Europe and spend lots and lots of money. But the truth is, you don't have to. We wrote a story recently, for example, you didn't mention France, and that's a place that exists on our list. One of our reporters there just did a story about how to winter on the French Riviera for $3,200 a month. She's arguing that it is quite easy, in fact, to live in a place like Nice, which you might perceive as being really, really expensive and high-end. You can live there for, you know, $3,200 a month. You can rent a small apartment furnished for $700 a month. And that's true all over. It's true, certainly, along the coast in Spain and in Portugal. You know, years ago, 30, 40 years ago, people, I think, would have thought of Portugal as like a backpacker's haven, right? It's where it really was low, low cost. And the truth is, it has remained so. The same thing in Portugal. For $2,000 a month, you can live extremely well. You know, the European lifestyle is so comfortable. So much of their culture is wrapped up in good food, in having parks that you can enjoy, in having art and cultural offerings that are accessible to the greater population. Well, that greater population is not making tons and tons of money. The average person in France makes about $30,000 a year. And so that's the same in Portugal. And so you're able to access this kind of lifestyle that we would think of as a genteel, a more gentle lifestyle than we have here in the States. It might not include massive space in your apartment because people are living in closer quarters, you know, that sort of thing. You adjust the size. America, we build everything big here, you know. So you might have a smaller apartment, but you have at your doorstep a wonderful coastline and parks and beautiful restaurants and cafes and that sort of thing. And you can enjoy that very European lifestyle for a lot less than you might think.
Jennifer, how much do you think of, I guess, two questions. You are hearing and reading about it in your publication. I've read about it in Money Magazine, the Wall Street Journal. You're hearing more and more about Americans that are choosing to retire or live overseas. How much of that has to do with, like, for example, the low returns that people get on money here, like at banks, interest rates are low, versus, let's say, the cost of living? So let's say I have X amount of dollars. I have Social Security and, let's say, a limited amount of income. So if I go down to Mexico, as you talk about, I can live like a king on maybe an average person's salary. So how much of this has to do with the purchasing power of the dollar and the fact that money in terms of investment returns is not as great here now in the United States with low interest rates? That's number one. And number two, how much of this has to do really of now with the internet and just people finding out more information, becoming more literate when it comes to living overseas? Because as you mentioned, 30, 40 years ago, you wouldn't have thought of this.
Right. I think it's a combination of both things. And a third as well. And that is that people retiring today are retiring and are healthier, are more active, have perhaps don't want to simply sit at home. But also baby boomers tend to have traveled in their lifetimes. And so they've seen a little bit of the world, many of them. And so there's also that element to it, that people don't want to necessarily just stay home and have your everyday retirement. They're not looking for their parents' retirement. They're looking for something different. So that's one element of it. The idea that people's savings has not grown as quickly as they had expected it to is definitely an issue and definitely something that helps push people overseas. The fact that people still, to a degree, their portfolios may not have really recovered from the crash in 08 either, you know, and so that's an issue. People thought that they would have more to retire on than they do today, and maybe you could get by in the States, but, you know, you've worked hard all your life. You might not want to just get by. You're looking for a retirement where you'll have money to travel, where you'll be able to go out to dinner and not have to count pennies, where maybe the cost of living is so affordable, you don't even have to worry about budgeting anything. You can kind of just do what you want to do. That can be hard to do in the United States, even for people who have saved, and people are living longer, you know, and you really have to have saved a large chunk of money to feel you will not outlive that nest egg. And if you go overseas, even, we're seeing people who will do this even for maybe a 5 or 10 year window that they think, oh, I'll probably come back to the States eventually. But if I go and I live in a good value place for 5 years or 10 years and I'm able to stock away, essentially, you know, I'm cutting my expenses in half or maybe down to a third of what it would cost me to live in the States, then you're actually able to grow your nest egg while you're enjoying an adventure in retirement and you are traveling and you're banking some of that money that you maybe weren't able to keep in the United States. And then we see people who do that for a few years and then go back. We've seen people delay accessing their Social Security. You know, if you can wait, often that money that you're getting will grow. But if you're staying in the States, you might feel like, well, I don't really have the income to do that. I'm going to have to access that Social Security the minute I'm eligible to do so. Well, if you take yourself overseas and you have a little bit of a nest egg you can live on for a few years, you can do that and live very comfortably in another country while your Social Security is growing. So if you then access it some years later, you're looking at a much greater amount of income that you have coming in. So there's all kinds of ways to sort of work the latitude, so to speak. And certainly the strength of the dollar has played a role in that in recent years. For sure, in the last year or so, Mexico, for example, the dollar has weakened against the peso in the last few months. But we have a gentleman who writes for us, and he pays rent in pesos. And I think it's the 20,000 pesos is what his rent is. And about 18 months ago, that was costing him about $1,300. Now it's something closer to like $1,000. And so that extra $300 that he had budgeted to pay for rent, he's just putting it in savings. And so that dollar differential definitely can be helpful. But even when the dollar is, as it currently is weakening against some currencies, it's still good value overseas in a lot of places.
So, Jennifer, let's say I'm maybe 1 or 2 years away from retirement, or maybe I just retired and I'm finding that my money doesn't buy me much, or I'm pinching pennies. What are the steps? What are the things that one needs to do before making a decision like, hey, let's go to Mexico or Costa Rica or Panama or something like that? How would you advise somebody that is considering moving overseas?
So the first thing I recommend people do is think long and hard about what it is they really want. And so what are your, ask yourself, like, what are your top priorities? Is it cost? Is that your number one issue? You want to make sure that you are spending much less than you are, and that's your number one issue. Okay. Or do you want to be close to the U.S.? Do you want to be in a place where there are great arts offerings? Or do you want to be on a beach? Do you want to be in a place where the weather is cool? You need to kind of essentially profile yourself. Think about what's most important to you. And then I recommend people use our retirement index. Frankly, we've gone through, we've got people who live all over the world who've helped us put this together. And you can look through the index that's divided by categories that include things like buying and renting, benefits and discounts, visas, fitting in, cost of living, healthcare, that sort of thing. You can go through and say, okay, well, if healthcare is most important to me, then these are the top countries I should look at. Or if proximity to the U.S. is close to me, these are the countries I should look at. There are some people who just do not want to learn another language. You know, they just don't. And so that's going to limit your choices. So, okay, if you want to be close to the United States and you don't want to learn Spanish, then you might look at a place like Belize, for example, which speaks English.
So, I mean, you know, most of the countries that you talk about in your survey, as I mentioned, a lot of them are in South America, and you can think of the value of the dollar in many of these places have a lot of Americans living down there. I was surprised there was very little in the area of Asia. You think of China, that it's cheaper to live. You think of places, well, Japan's not that cheap, but I was surprised very little in the area of like Australia or in Asia. Is it just because of the expense or the distance?
It's a little bit of both, primarily the expense. We do recommend Malaysia, and we recommend Thailand. We recommend Cambodia. The Philippines is on our list. And the difficulty really is the distance, primarily. People just don't necessarily want to be that far away from home. You've got elderly parents you may need to check in on, or you've got boomerang kids who are coming back home. And so being on the other side of the planet can be problematic. That said, the values that exist in a place like Malaysia or in Thailand, particularly those two, are really absolutely extraordinary and exotic. It takes a certain person who wants to go and plop themselves into an experience that's going to feel fundamentally very foreign, right? You're not going to have that same sense of foreignness if you're in Mexico that you will if you're in Thailand or in Malaysia or Cambodia. But that said, those countries are beautiful and offer a lot of the same attributes that our countries in Latin America that we recommend offer. So that is to say, really good value in terms of what your dollars will buy, very friendly populations. The places we recommend most certainly are very safe. And you've got opportunity to travel and see part of the world that is very different and intriguing and interesting. And the healthcare, I should say, too, in that part of the world is really good. And those are places that are huge markets for health tourism. People come from around the world to access healthcare in those places. And so that's something else that you benefit from in those places as well, but they're far away. And that's kind of the downside. Now, if that doesn't matter to you, then they should be on your short list for sure.
Okay, so a lot of it has to do with, let's say, money and distance. And obviously, if you're living in Australia and your kids are in Missouri or, you know, the Pacific Northwest or even on the East Coast, I mean, that is, what is it, 26 hours of travel just to get there.
Exactly. And that's prohibitive for a lot of folks. You know, one of the reasons we have so many places in Central and South America on our list is just because they're really genuinely accessible. You're more or less in the same time zone. You are in the U.S., you might be an hour or two or three off, but you're pretty close, you know, whereas if you're in Thailand, you're 12 hours away. So that's an issue as well.
So, Jennifer, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about your publication, because you cover a lot of retirement issues, you cover a lot of travel issues, best places to live, international living speaks for itself, but how could they find out more about what you folks do?
Yeah, the best way to get familiar with us is to go to our website. It's at www.internationalliving.com. We have a free daily e-letter called our IELTS postcards. as I said, there's no cost. You can put your email address in and we'll send it to you. And we also have a monthly magazine, which we have been publishing since 1979.
Well, listen, Jennifer, I want to thank you for joining us on Lifetime Income. Really appreciate it. And it makes so much sense today with the cost of living. The dollar buys a lot more overseas. And for some people, they don't have quite the money they thought they were going to have when they were retired. So overseas living makes a lot of sense. Thanks for joining us on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You know, we covered this issue on Monday on the program, and I wanted to cover it because we talk about some of the best places to live in the United States, whether it's cities or states or where not to live. And one of the issues, as we brought up in that interview, is a lot of people today are finding that the money they have, either from Social Security or the income from their investments, isn't buying the kind of lifestyle they thought they were going to have in retirement. You've often heard us do case studies where we do what we call tax inversions, where people move from high expense areas like California and they move to places like, let's say, Arizona, Nevada, Texas, or even Florida, where it's cheaper to live. Well, add one more aspect to your thinking. If you are thinking of moving, think about international. As Jennifer talked about, many of the places on their list, you can live like a king on a commoner's income. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.